ladies, and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 in Chicago with a live studio audience. Woo! Wow, I turned the volume down as much as I could on that one. Welcome everyone with an exciting Monday Motivation. We had quite a Shabbos in the city with the Project 613. In fact, that is the motivation for this podcast. We were going to do it on Purim, and it's very fitting that we went downtown. We go down once a month. It's such a major operation. You know, I empathize with the United States Army, you know, like, setting up camp in a foreign nation. It's sort of what we feel like, feeding well over 100 meals this Shabbos. To so many incredible, incredible people in downtown Chicago, young professionals teeming with them. But the streets of downtown Chicago were not just teeming with Jewish young professionals. They were teeming with hordes and battalions of green-clad individuals for St. Patrick's Day. Yes, I think maybe outside of Ireland, probably the greatest celebration of St. Patrick's Day is in Chicago, Illinois. And we were downtown with our, you know, Jewish Orthodox families and our Jewish students and celebrating Shabbos in the midst of this green wave. Now, okay, so this is the perfect segue and jumping off point to talk about Purim, because they're drinking on St. Patrick's Day and we're drinking on Purim. And to the untrained eye, the untrained eye can clearly see the difference between St. Patrick's Day and Purim. But if one's untrained eye could not distinguish between the, what do I even call it? It's hard to describe. For distinguished people, I can't even describe what we saw on our center is in a very beautiful building. It's literally our windows look out into the alley. Let's just put it this way. To make it kosher for viewing, everyone, we had to close the shades. Okay, let's just put it that way. So even if one could not distinguish between the drinking on St. Patrick's Day and Purim, it is a beautiful opportunity to describe the uniqueness of Judaism and the unique awesomeness of Purim. And so let me take you through my week. My week was, you know, listen, to recruit, 70 plus people to come for Shabbos, night, day, 80 people. It was, thank God, a lot of people. It takes a lot of work. This week was particularly difficult because it was ding, 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 ding in the green corner. We have St. Patrick, and ding, 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 ding in the blue and white corner. It's Rabbi Garfinkel. Head-to-head battle, who will win? Will St. Patrick take the Jews away and have him celebrate St. Paddy's Day? Or will Rabbi Garfinkel be able to persuade them to come connect to their own source of spirituality, of true fun and true connection, which is Shabbos? Okay, so I wish I could say that I was 100% successful. St. Pat got a lot of our compatriots away from Shabbos, but I am so proud of literally over 70 young professionals who throughout Shabbos came and spent Shabbos with us. It's truly, truly, truly remarkable and amazing. And I just sent them an email telling them how proud I was that they plugged in to Shabbos. But nevertheless, I said, you know what? Let's use this opportunity to figure out who St. Patrick was. Because guess what? The people who are wearing green downtown Chicago and around the world, but in particular in downtown Chicago, I bet in more than 90% had no idea who St. Patrick was. And aside from the fact that he was a saint and a holy person of the Catholic Church, but really what his life was and what he was about. And from a little journey in the exploring the life of St. Patrick, we are going to find out a lot about the difference between Christianity and Judaism and St. Patrick's Day and Purim. So fasten your seatbelts. Here we go. Let's take a little investigative reporting on St. Patrick. So he was born in the 5th century Now, that means in the 400s. Just to give some context, this is when the Talmud is being still discussed and written and compiled in Babylonia, in Iraq. The Jewish temple had been destroyed about 400 years ago from the Romans, and the Roman Empire, a few hundred years later, probably about 100 years before St. Patrick came around, maybe a little bit more, became officially Catholic, became Christian. Okay, that is the official religion of the Roman Empire. Okay, so he was born in Britain to a wealthy British family, and he was so wealthy that he was captured by Irish pirates that invaded kibbutz. Oh, no, excuse me. He invaded Irish pirates that invaded their family villa. He was taken to Ireland for 6 years. He had a vision. He should leave. He snuck away. He had a very long journey home. He convinced a sailor boat captain to take him along, took him along back to Britain, dropped him off on shore. He had a long journey back. He was really close to starvation. He prayed and he was saved. And that was one of his key transformation moments that he decided to become a Christian missionary. And how was he saved? A herd of wild boar, that's wild pig, came and he was able to eat some of them. Clearly not a kosher story. He was not going to convert to Judaism. Okay, so he comes back to Ireland, and because he has a vision, and what happens? He was pretty good. He had a vision that he should return to Ireland. He does. He goes to preach the word, the gospel, and he set up his own Catholic outreach group. And legend has it that he baptized thousands of people to Christianity from paganism, because that what was going on in Ireland. Okay, and we're going to say something now, we're going to file it away and use it a little bit later, but he said that he was proud that the children of the Irish leaders are now monks and virgins of J.C. Okay, we don't mention his name, Yoshka, we say someone directly, indirectly responsible for millions of Jewish deaths throughout the tradition is not to say his full name. So, but he was proud that the children of the Irish leaders, that he got them to become monks and virgins of J.C. Specifically that was like his vision. He was so excited about that. Not that they were believers, but specifically that they were monks and virgins, people who had removed themselves from marriage, from marital intimacy, that they were above it all. Okay, and this gets us into a little bit of the concept of Christianity. And it's an issue that every religion needs to deal with. Every religion needs to deal with, how do you deal with the body and the soul? You have a physical entity called the body, you have a spiritual entity called the soul. And we have been addressing this theme in the last couple of months. It's a very important theme. And you have certain religions that go all in with the spirituality, and they're ascetic, and they meditate on mountaintops and don't get married, and their priestly class is above it all, quote unquote, until they're thrown into jail for other crimes, which we shall not go into. But then there are other quote unquote religions, call it secularism or hedonism, that basically go and glorify the body, and therefore it's all about the body. And you will see a fascinating insight into Christianity is that it's either one or the other. It's black or white. It's either, as St. Augustine writes in The City of God, it's either the city of God or the city of man. You have the shining castle on the hill or evil, dark man. And the only way you can bridge the two is by accepting J.C. That is a fundamental Catholic Christian tenet. And, Mom and Dad, I learned that at Stanford. Okay, so you can take nachas from all the Stanford tuition that you paid. Thank you so much. Okay, that's a little honoring my parents in the meantime. So here we go. So basically, you have this sort of black and white thing. Anything spiritual is removed from physicality. Anything that's in physicality is dark and evil. And so therefore, you have a religion that swings back and forth between these two poles. Okay, and so that brings us into the drinking. So what is going on with the drinking? So there's two legends. Why do you drink on St. Patrick's Day? One is that St. Patrick was visiting a stingy innkeeper, and she was very stingy, and he comes to her and he says, "You're feeding a demon in the basement with your stinginess." They go down, they see the demon, she's freaked out, and she gets the lesson. He returned to a little while later, he saw that she was pouring the whiskey, it was flowing, and the demon was weak. They went down, and he saw St. Patrick and fled. Okay, and so therefore St. Patrick decreed that everyone should drink whiskey on his yahrzeit on the anniversary of his death. Now, what do you see here? But a religion that is either black or white, that can only be fully spiritual, detached from physicality, or fully physical, when St. Patrick himself says that you should have a drink on his anniversary of his death, on the day of his feast, of his celebration of his life, what was it going to be? You know, many times I've thought this for many years, you know, I feel bad for St. Pat, you know, like a holy Jewish sage who dies, or even an average Jew who dies. What do we do on the yahrzeit? We say Kaddish. We have a family meal. We celebrate the life in a very defined, refined and distinctive and uplifting manner. We give tzedakah. We improve people's lives. We use the physical resources of money, of alcohol, of blessings. The Sephardic community is a beautiful custom on a yahrzeit. They take all sorts of different types of foods with different blessings, and they say the blessings, and through that physical entity, the peanut, the walnut, the apple, the pear, the whatever it is, that those blessings, the candy, the different blessings, we elevate the physical to a higher spiritual level. That is a uniquely Jewish concept that no other religion has. None. And so therefore, I used to think, you know, I feel bad. You know, St. Pat, when he comes around this year, I don't know if he's upstairs or downstairs, it's not for me to say. But what did his life inspire? Millions of people drinking like human animals. And if you don't believe me, you should have been downtown Chicago with us. The worst of human behavior. Can you imagine St. Patrick in the next world shaking his head? You know, like, you know, literally, what did I do to deserve millions of people around the world acting like human animals? And the answer is that he, in a certain level, caused it because of the ideology of his religion that bifurcated, that split the physical and the spiritual realm. Here's another example. That was one reason for the drinking on St. Patrick's Day. But the other one that I saw was fascinating, is that we are now in the time of Lent, right? So my family had, for a certain time, lived in New Orleans. And so Mardi Gras was a big deal. Mardi Gras is the Tuesday, Fat Tuesday, literally in French, before Ash Wednesday. Now, Ash Wednesday up until Easter. Now, here you have a rabbi teaching about Catholicism, and I do not profess to be an expert, but this is basic knowledge, nothing fancy. So from Ash Wednesday through Easter, the concept of Lent, that you take on, refrain from something, that some people from meat, other people from alcohol. And so Mardi Gras, you see this pattern again. Mardi Gras is this holiday of debauchery and total indulgence and total physicality to get your last licks in before you go cold turkey in Lent. One of the explanations why St. Patrick's Day became so big with drinking is because St. Patrick's Day falls in the middle of Lent, and therefore you had a no-fly zone. You had a free, no rules day. You know, take the gloves off. You can take a break from Lent. And therefore, again, you see the black and white. You see the Mardi Gras feasting, indulgence, and then Lent, total abstention. And then, oh, here's St. Patrick's Day, total indulgence, and back again for the rest of Lent. And this stands in stark contrast to what we're doing on Purim. Why are we drinking on Purim? So there's a salient feature about the Megillah, about Megillah Esther, is that God's name is not explicitly mentioned. God is behind the scenes. God is, quote unquote, so to speak, wearing a mask. Now, just because someone's wearing a mask doesn't mean they're far away. They could be right here. You just don't see them. They're camouflaged. That is how God runs his world after his temple, after prophecy ended, which was actually before the temple is destroyed, but certainly after the temple is destroyed. God runs his world with a mask on. But does that mean that the Almighty is not there? No, we just need to uncover the mask. We need to pull back the camouflage, and we see the loving, caring, beautiful hand of the Almighty guiding our lives. And so God puts on a mask, and therefore we put on a mask. That is the reason why we have costumes on Purim, is that we are imitating the Almighty. We are going through and demonstrating that just as God is hidden, but he's still here, so too us. We also put on masks. We also put on masks. We are certain personality or certain image and persona to our friends and to our employers. We're different. And to our family, maybe we're different. And by the time we go through the day, we could put on all the masks. We can live a life of artificiality to our true selves. But the question is, who is the real me? Who is the real me? And sometimes you need a little dynamite to blast through the externalities, to blast through the superficialities, to dig deep, to drill down to our core personalities. And that's what we do to drink on Purim. We are not drinking to violate our moral code, to become a human animal, to do things we never would normally do and use an excuse of alcohol to do it. We are not drinking to become someone we're not. We are drinking to take off our personal superficial mask to demonstrate to the world who we really are. We are taking off the mask of superficiality, and therefore we are accessing our deep inner goodness. And I'll quote Rabbi David Gottlieb, who used to say all the time at Or Sameach that one needs to work on themselves for 364 days out of the year to be able to pull back the curtain of one's deep inner self to show it to everyone on the day of Purim. It takes a lot of work to be able to make oneself beautiful inside, to be able to reveal that to the world. And so therefore you'll see on Purim beautiful, happy drunks. You will see people who normally are not able to express themselves, who are not necessarily emotional and don't necessarily express their emotions, going around being happy drunks, hugging people, telling them they love them. In yeshiva, it was just the best day. It was truly incredible. People dedicating their lives to becoming better, to learning more, basically 24/7 around the clock, obviously sleeping and drinking and eating aside from that, but you connect with these people and on Purim to share your deep feelings of gratitude and love and connection with those people you're striving to become better for. Purim in Yeshiva was absolutely incredible. And Purim in our West Rogers Park community and communities around the world is when neighbors are able to express their joy with each other and their inner essence of how happy they are to be neighbors, to be friends. And it's a time also of tremendous reconciliation. If there are residuals and tension, Purim is the day that we reveal our deep essence, that any conflict that we had with other people is really just a mask. And deep down, we're all Jewish brothers and sisters, and we are all one. You know, many have said that anti-Semitism and the difficult decrees that we have had throughout our 3,335, almost 36 years of history since Mount Sinai, are really just God putting on a mask, God quote-unquote hiding, Hester Panim. And the way that we are able to return that Hester Panim, that God's hiding his face, to that God's shining his face upon us, is when we take off our mask to our fellow Jews, when we become united, when we share our love with our fellow Jews. And I can think of no greater time. God put on a huge mask on October 7th, but he did it for a reason, for us to wake up, to become the people that we are, to stop with the superficialities of disagreement about silly political arguments and get to the core of who we are. We are the Amanifla, we're the chosen nation. We have a moral duty and responsibility. We can't get stuck in silly, what we call in Yiddish, Kleinigkeit, silly trivialities. Enough of this, please, people, I'm begging you. If you think the great change that the world needs is Democrat versus Republican, you have the wrong idea of what it means. Real change is when Jews wake up and we're united. It doesn't matter who is in government. The Almighty is controlling the world and he wants something from us. He wants us to take off our masks, to become one with each other. So on this Purim, which is coming up this coming Saturday night, March 23rd, and Sunday, March 24th, get yourself to a Megillah reading. Get yourself, give tzedakah, give charity. If you need to know how, I'm happy to connect you to people that can distribute to actual poor Jews on the day, which is the mitzvah. Give a gift basket of food to another Jew and get yourself to a Purim meal. And if you need help finding one, please let me know and I will help you find one, because this is the day of celebration that all the October 7ths of history are just the Almighty putting on a mask. And when we take off our mask, he will take off his mask and lead to the ultimate redemption, the ultimate leading and guiding the Jewish people back to their homeland in peace and tranquility as the chosen people, respected and honored by the nations of the world. May it happen speedily in our days. God bless. Have an amazing week. Have an amazing Purim. And I'm going to take a week off because Sunday night I will not necessarily be in condition to record a Monday Motivation. God bless. Have a wonderful Purim. We look forward to seeing you next time for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation.